On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
This one is fair. Nice knockdown by Bluth, and he throws him out. What a play by Trevor Bluth.
Oh, he's seen a couple nice, very nice defensive plays behind Malone, and that was outstanding.
Here's a drive to left off the bat of Dozier. It is back, tie game. Just like that, the Twins have tied it up.
And home run number 12 for Brian Dozier.
With the center field hit, going back.
Wow, what a game there. By the way, they call that an error, David Helmer, on Aaron Hicks. I think that's a circus catch if he makes it. Did you see that thing?
It's definitely a tough one. Running full bore.
Full bore over the shoulder, arm extended. I mean, that's an everyday catch for a guy like him, but my word, I think that almost, I would have called that a hit, but, you know, it doesn't matter. The Twins lose the game anyway. They're fourth in a row, and they are definitely in a little bit of a tailspin here, but believe it or not, just two games out of first place in the Central Division at this stage of June and still hold the top wild card spot, although by a thread. Gene Larkin is in a batting cage somewhere heating up his Edina American Legion team as they prepare to take on the Hopkins Flyers today at 1 o'clock at Braemar Field. And on the phone from Rochester is Al Newman, as we are preparing to talk nothing but baseball for the next hour. In this upcoming show, we're going to talk about the Twins. We're going to go down the Joe Mauer path. I just had a heated argument about that, and I can't wait to bring Al into the middle of it. And then we're going to bring Tim Kolomainen in. We're going to talk a little bit about the state tournament. That thing is in full force. And then we'll continue on with some more Twins talk. We'll have five questions with Al and much more. David Helmer behind the controls. Pete Wagner here in studio. Al in Rochester, good morning to you.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, guys? And just to put my two cents worth, when you talk about tailspin, that would be the definition of my team right now. But getting back to that Aaron Hicks catch there, when you set the standard and the bar is raised, there are expectations to make those plays. And, you know, when you have teams that aspire to be champions, sometimes the tough plays are expected to be made, and I think that's one of those in that instance that, you know, you're expected to make that play, and when you don't, you get an error attached to your name.
Yeah, I like the fact that you talk about the bar and the standard, and that's what happens. You know, the Twins now have lost four in a row. They're 3-7 in their last 10. Were swept by Kansas City at home, lost two out of three to Milwaukee, now have lost six of their last seven. They're 3-8 in the month of June. Of course, Torrey Hunter picks up the two-game suspension for his outburst. And all that, as I mentioned, there's still just two games out of first, and the wild card's still theirs at this stage. It's obviously very early in the season. But, Al, you know, the reason the Twins were able to catapult into first place were because the Kansas City Royals and Detroit Tigers were stumbling, too. So everybody goes through these periods of play. Can you describe what happens in the clubhouse there?
You know, when things are going good, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy. You know, you're just playing the game, and it seems like Lady Luck is on your side, or whatever you want to call it. The karma is flowing in your favor, and everything you touch turns to gold. And, you know, as I wrote down here, the hangover effect of that is once you get knocked off, and you realize what type of run you were on, and you start thinking about the good times and how you did this and how that. That's why this game is so mental, because then you start to try to reinvent what you did before and had success. And, you know, it's up and down. It's an up and down long season. And as I wrote down, I wrote the Kansas City series sweep. What a hangover. It was the biggest series of the year. That they had entered into playing, and Kansas City was coming off of a cycle that had them losing. So they caught Kansas City at the wrong time as the Twins' cycle was changing. But yet, you know, they're still competitive. Their cycle, their chance will come back again, obviously, before the summer's over. But it's just a test. It's just what baseball is. That's why you try to play in 10 game increments and gauge things after 10 games.
With the Kansas City series, Al, I was wondering, you know, you talked about raising the bar of play, at least from a defensive perspective, from a guy like Aaron Hicks. Then I kind of fast forward ahead to take a look and look at overall team play. Is that an example where the Twins are starting to flex their muscle? They've got a little swagger about themselves, and a team like Kansas City comes in and says, hey, boys, wait a minute. We've been here a little bit longer than you, at least this group of Twins. We've been here a little bit longer than you. You got to get through us, and they flex their muscle a little bit. The first two games were almost playoff-style pitcher duels, fantastic. But Kansas City seemed like they really said, wait a minute. You know, this is our show for now.
Well,
is there a little
for Kansas
of that?
City, and for Kansas City, it was their opportunity to face the Twins and say, hey, look, you still have not caught us. You may be in first place, but we still are the team to beat, or one of the two teams to beat in this division. And I hate to go back, but I think back to the Torrey Hunter Young days when he had Jock Jones and Doug Minkiewicz and Corey Koski. When they were beating up on Kansas City back in the early 2000s, Kansas City was trying to get where the Twins were, and now it's vice versa. A new young group of Twins players are trying to catch the young veteran players of the Kansas City Royals. So, yes, the Royals had to show the Twins that they were still the leaders in the division, but yet the Twins did not embarrass themselves whatsoever in the way they competed toe-free through one heck of a game, as did, was that Gibson or the first two games of that series? I know.
Gibson struggled a little bit in his outing. Hughes was pretty solid, gets the loss. I think that was the 3-1 loss. And then it was Gibson, I think, that was the 2-0 game, followed by, who am I missing here?
Did Pelfrey throw in that one?
No, Pelfrey goes tonight.
Okay. Yeah, it was a good series. I mean, there was nothing to hang their head about. But the hangover effect is, wow, we were on such a run. We got to first place. We possibly had a game and a half, two-game lead at one point, maybe a game and a half. And then the Royals came in and did what they did to them. So it's just a matter of recouping and getting that swag and momentum going again. And things like the Torrey Hunter event, they occur in the midst of things on the down cycle.
Well, I want to get into that Torrey Hunter event as well. You know, the pitch that was, I thought that was a strike on the inside corner there. He thought it might have been probably a little bit high. Did you get a look at that video?
Well, I saw it, and I thought immediately it was a ball. And I didn't even know that, you know, I saw the highlight. I didn't know he got thrown out there. You know, it was like they were showing the end of the game and things of that nature, and they showed that highlight, and I went, well, man, that pitch was not a strike. And then I realized that that's the one that Torrey got thrown out on. And, you know, again, you put that on top of competing for first place, first big series, cycles going down. You know, it takes a veteran to react. And again, some of these umpires late in the game, they just want to get them over with. I'm not saying that was the case. But, you know, players that are competitors to the end, and by no means am I condoning Torrey doing a little striptease there. But, you know, that's what it comes down to. What comes to mind for me is a guy like Joey Votto had the same incident, although he kept his shirt on. But he did argue balls and strikes, and he got tossed at the end of the game. The veteran players, not only do they expect the calls late in games, but they expect the umpires to be on par, as they should be, for all nine innings.
Well, I guess the original question I have, though, was that first pitch, did you see that? That was up and in, and then he complained on that. Did you feel like that was a strike?
I felt like that was not a strike.
Okay, so he says something. What's the type of thing that a hitter could say to an umpire behind the plate to trigger a clear pitch that was 2-3 inches off the plate for a strike three? Didn't even think about it. What do you think he said to him that got him that fired up?
You got to be kidding me. You haven't called that pitch all night.
And that's all it takes?
Yeah. And then, you know, right there, the catcher gets the cue. Hey, well, if I get off the corner late in the count, it's a good chance he might get the call to ring up the hitter. And I think that's what happened.
So now, in your day, did that happen, Al?
Oh, most definitely. There were days, especially on getaway days, which would be Thursday when you play a day game after a night game, Thursdays or Sundays. back in the day, umpires used to take the back end of that brush and grade out the outside corner another quarter of an inch or so, and you sort of knew that was the distance of the strike zone and then some on getaway day, and there was nothing you could do about it. I tell you, Joe West used to be notorious for that back in the day. It was getaway Joe on Sunday. So you knew you had to swing the bat, and you also knew that there was a possibility that someone was going to get tossed arguing about the strike zone.
Because it's usually part. So I think as a hitter, that's very frustrating because it's expanding and contracting all the time, and you never know what you get. But so at that stage, then Torrey Hunter just says enough is enough. Now, what happens with the relationship after you tee off on an umpire like that? I mean, obviously everybody's got to have thick skin in this game. It's the nature of it. But is there a carryover ever where there's issues that carry on where guys don't let things go?
Well, you know, there are some umpires that will not. Obviously, just like outside of baseball, people don't let things go. But the good ones, you know, they tend to not take stuff from young players. As they would like to say, get some dirt on your cleats before you start popping off.
Sure.
In essence, saying you don't have enough time in the league to be questioning the strike zone because you haven't established anything in this league. But guys like Torrey Hunter, umpires are generally, you know, the next day it's more or less forgotten because they know his work over the years has not been one to be confrontational. But yet he will let you know, and umpires will let you talk to him.
Sure.
They'll let you conversate with him. If you do it discreetly, you shouldn't turn. You probably should pretend like you're cleaning the dirt or, you know, smoothing out the dirt in the batter's box with your head down, kind of talking to them so it's not drawing attention so the fans don't realize that you're actually ear-holing them out at that point in time.
Showing them up, obviously. So can you say the same thing with your head down if you're moving some dirt?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Okay.
For sure. It's all in technique. Don't look back. You know, just keep your head down, maybe look out towards the pitcher's mound and you know, to break the conversation and then go back at it. But they can respect that, and a lot of them, you know, the majority of them are pretty good.
So Al, at the end of the day, I mean, you can't really do anything about it, right?
No, you can't change the call at all. You just get the worst headache of your life.
Is it worth opening your mouth? I mean, I know it's hard. I mean, what do you tell your players on your team in the Northwoods League? Obviously, you're teaching them these things, and they know some of it in some instances. But what are you going through?
Well, you know, at the beginning of the season, I tell these guys, first of all, they don't have the money to pay the fines, to leave the umpires alone and let me be the one to get tossed out of the game or handle it. But you know what? Your competitive nature, your adrenaline, it's just an immediate reaction to the umpires making bad calls. And really, you know, by the time you can warn them and say, don't say this, but at that point in time when it happens, it's then, you know, it's just the way it goes, and you've just got to calm them down as soon as possible. The umpires in this league are so young that they don't know how to keep a grudge yet. They're just trying to get into the league themselves.
So we're all learning together.
Yeah.
We've heard a lot of discussion in the Twin Cities market here about the Twins coaching staff. I think that's a little bit overrated, you know, getting in there and trying to get him out. And, you know, everybody's judging that. Your thoughts on that? Did Paul Molitor do what he was supposed to?
Well, I've been in that situation as a third base coach. I don't know if you recall the incident back in the day when the pitcher from Cleveland drilled Torrey, and Torrey picked the ball up and threw it back at him.
I do.
I was the third base coach there, and that baseball was underneath my foot at the time because I've known Torrey, had been around him for so many years that I knew he was going to go charge the mound. So I got down there in a hurry and got control of Torrey, and the baseball, it was up under my foot, and Torrey's going, come on, Noom, let me get the ball. And I go, Torrey, no. And he goes, hey, let me get the ball, Newman. So I lift my foot. No sooner I lift my foot up, he's tossing it at the pitcher, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, you do what you can. You can't control adrenaline. Guys are super strong in those situations because they're excited. And as far as Molitor and those guys doing what they're supposed to do, come on now. He's a grown man. You can ask him to calm down. You don't want to be trying to manhandle him to escalate the situation.
I completely agree with you on that. I think it's been a topic that's been, I would say, Al, over-addressed over the airwaves. It's like, really, let's He knows what he's doing here, and if he wants to go after it, he goes after it. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the overall hitting approach to this Twins team right now, and also Joe Mauer. I mean, I know at the specific Little League ball game today, there was seven parents ripping into Joe Mauer and his numbers and his value. I want to get your opinions on all of those and more. Tim Kolomainen at the bottom of the hour. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to On Deck Radio. The Minnesota Twins are currently in Texas as they embark on another road trip. They'll go from Texas to St. Louis, I believe, David Helmer. Is that correct?
Sounds right.
Okay. And then back home eventually as they look to get off the schneid, as we like to say, as they've lost four in a row. But who's looking? This is baseball. It's a long season. It's how it goes. Al Newman is with us. Gene Larkin is sweating right now in the cages, heating up his Edina American Legion baseball team. They will be taking on the Hopkins Flyers. They've got a mini tournament going on over there at Braemar Fields. They've got 13A, 11AA, and 14-15A tournaments happening. And it's always a great time to be at the park. Tim Kolomainen will join us at the bottom of the hour as we'll take a segment to talk about the Minnesota State baseball tournament. And then at the final hour, quarter hour, we're going to talk with Al a little bit more about the Twins, preview their week ahead, talk about his club and some of the things that he's working on with them as well. I got to go here on the Joe Mauer topic, Al. You ready?
Yeah, oh, I'm ready. You know, it always gets a little heated when it's talking about Joe Mauer, who potentially might break all the Twins' records as far as hitting is concerned.
Okay, so let me lay the groundworks of this discussion. Now, this wasn't planned at all for this show, and this was actually a conversation that occurred between myself and what I call one of my very best friends, good friends, who's out at a Little League park, and he likes to remind me that Joe Mauer, when he doesn't perform, that his contract is $23 million a year. We get that.
Sure.
But that he is far underproducing what, and I agree with that, absolutely. I mean, $23 million. I mean, you got to be crushing it.
Let's just start with that.
Okay.
Okay. First point, $23 million. Okay. When we gave Joe, not we, when the Carl Polad family gave Joe that money, Joe was at the top of his career. He was a catcher, and he was winning batting titles. He was never winning home run titles. He was winning batting titles. I think that's what people forget. He was not hitting home runs. He had one year where he really pounded the home runs and hit 28, 29?
Yep.
Okay, so he's not a home run hitter. He was winning batting titles. And he was the homegrown favorite son with the long sideburns. Right?
Yep.
Everybody
yep.
wanted to wear the sideburns.
Yep.
Everybody
they're giving
wanted
them
to
away.
Be Joe Mauer.
Yep.
Okay, now they overlooked at that point that he wasn't driving in runs like someone that was, he's still a superstar, but it was because he was a catcher, okay? And he wasn't really hitting for any power. There were years when they said Morneau had bad years, and he hit more homers and had more RBIs than Mauer, but Mauer had won a batting title. And people's vision was skewed. When they say he's overpaid, he was overpaid even when they gave him the contract. Nobody's worth $23 million, but yet Joe Mauer is who he is and who he always was. Now he's just not winning batting titles.
So let me jump in. What would have happened had he signed with Boston, who was flirting with him, or the New York Yankees, who were also in the discussions, if I remember correctly, during that free agency period? Target Field was just open. And there would have been, and you heard people saying on these airwaves and across the Twin Cities and in the columns and everywhere else that, you know, we'll see how cheap the Polad family is here if they're actually going to do something. Well, they did do something, and they had to do what the market bore. And you know, the issue is they signed the player for what it was worth at the time. And I think when you go into these signings with these players, you know there's going to be diminishing returns when you turn 32
oh,
to 35,
definitely.
Right?
Yep, for sure. For sure. This town would have went flat out crazy if Joe Mauer hadn't have been signed and he left and went to Boston or any other place. And now the Twins have a contract that the fans, media, myself, we all say he's overpaid based off of production. For a guy to make that kind of money, you're thinking of Miguel Cabrera. type of stuff. Joe has never been or will be that type of player. He was one of the best catchers who could hit in the game when he got that contract. He was never considered a power or an RBI guy. He was considered a doubles guy and a batting champion. So I think the whole perception of what Joe Mauer makes has been, it's been skewed, based primarily off the dollar bills and not based off of what his actual production was, as far as numbers-wise.
Okay, so we agree that he was signed as a catcher, which we say a lot in this program, and that's what he was.
Yes.
We also agree that he was signed to a long-term deal, and we agree that $23 million is a major price tag. But we also, I think, agree with
what... Every Minnesotan would have been very
absolutely ballistic. Absolutely. Yeah. The club had... I don't want to say they didn't have a choice, but it was a good business decision, let's be frank. And then the other thing is that I think we overlooked the fact that at the time he was one of the best receivers in the game from the catcher position, a perennial all-star. You know, nobody has done the things he's done with the batting titles from the catcher position. It's unprecedented.
Yes, sir.
So you can't really argue that. Okay, so now we fast forward the tape to today. Concussions and injuries and legs and all the other things have forced him down the 90 feet to first base. He's transitioning into that position. The bat is not what it was from an average perspective, no doubt.
No.
And maybe you can talk on that as you get older, you get maybe a little slower, or they get a book on you, you know, the whole thing. It all kind of plays into itself that way.
I think Joe is one of those guys where the sabermetrics has truly affected the shifts that they play on Joe. Has taken away that in addition to no longer being on turf. I think a lot of things have changed for Joe Mauer. Going to Target Field, yes, new stadium for the Twins, but it was no longer a turf field. Joe was a doubles machine by hitting the ball into the gaps. And he also hit a lot of ground balls that found their way through holes because it was turf. Not saying he can't hit on grass, but obviously different circumstance.
Well, there is no turf anywhere really in the league, so it's all grass, and that changes. But, I mean, there's a reason why batting averages across the board have dipped tremendously.
Yeah, it's called 95 miles an hour.
Yeah, well, it's called 95 miles an hour. It's called...
lefty specialist.
Well, you know, I think that the turf has definitely played into it across the board. Pitcher-friendly ballparks, the way they're set up now and configured. But across the board, we are absolutely 100% in the era of the pitcher, and the batting averages have tumbled. As you, I don't even know how many 300 hitters we're going to have at the end of the year in each league.
Sure, it's amazing. It's so tough. A lot of times, if teams really wanted to, like the Kansas City Royals do, you get your starter to the sixth inning and it's lights out 7, 8, 9.
Here come the specialists.
Yeah, here come the specialists, and they're blowing close to 100. And they one inning max effort. It's tough on a hitter. You don't get a read on him. You don't get comfortable in the box. You rarely, if ever, hear of good pinch hitters anymore. Towards the latter part of my career, there were still guys that were carried just as pinch hitters. You don't see that anymore because of the dominance of the bullpen guy.
The bullpen spot is going to those guys now,
or that extra spot.
It's not a bat off the bench when it used to be that way in previous years. So now the argument to wrap up the Mauer discussion is that his salary is hamstringing the Twins' ability to sign other players make personnel decisions. My argument back to that was this team has signed more free agents at higher values, two of which, by the way, right now aren't even playing, one with an impingement, one out with his suspension. But needless to say, it has not stopped them from paying. The argument back was, well, it is because they have the $23 million that they put down to first base and they should have someone else in there. Well, what do you say to that?
I say to that, where are you going to find a player as good as Joe Mauer that doesn't cost more than $23 million or thereof? You know, close to 15 or 20 million. Joe Mauer is still a very good professional hitter. He's adequate at first base. It's not like there's a whole bunch of gold glove first basemen just laying around. Joe is way above the average first baseman. He's not the power guy, but he's way above the average first baseman. Let's not take for granted that the experience that Joe has over there is not easily acquired, obviously. You got the young guy with the Twins that's trying to find his way right now, but we're not sure if he can.
Vargas.
Yes, Vargas. We're not sure that he can hit in the major leagues yet. So a whole lot of uncertainty. You take what you get. You're stuck with the $23 million. Not stuck with it, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Joe took advantage of the situation that was before him. He got paid, but yet the Twins are still acquiring talent and can. And you're normally on a team. There's only four or five guys that are going to make the bulk of the money. Joe's money is not hamstringing the Minnesota Twins whatsoever. Yes, if they could get Vargas to do what he does, and they're never going to trade Joe. So, or could they possibly trade Joe? I don't know who would take the $23 million. It's not saying he's not worth it.
Well, that therein lies, and,
won't pay
and
it
you
down.
Know, therein lies their argument is
yeah.
that they can't do anything with it, they can't trade it, and that it's they're hamstrung or handcuffed. I don't think that's the case. I think they had no choice but to sign him back
right.
in 2009. So my point to this is, from a fan base and from a media base, why complain about it?
Well, thank you. I used to initially. You know, when the team was competitive a few years back, before Joe actually was in, I think it was like the first year of the contract. Reason being, I thought they had a lot of other needs, but there was no way they could not sign Joe. So it was a matter of acceptance. You know, nobody's worth what these ball players are making. They weren't worth what I was making back in the day. Or we weren't worth what Babe Ruth got back in his day, because according to everybody else, it was way too much money. But the supply and demand, and that's what makes it happen. And Joe Mauer is a major league player, and he's a quality major league player. And we just need to get past the $23 million.
Bingo. All right. Thank you very much, sir. We come back with High School Talk and Tim Kolomainen. Al Newman, stay on the line with us from Rochester, Minnesota. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. When it comes to our talk about Joe Mauer, Al Newman is on the line from Rochester. He prepares for a game with his Alexandria Club in the Northwoods League. And Tim Kolomainen joins the airwaves. Now we're going to talk high school baseball. Of course, Mauer, one of the incredible baseball high school legends, and football and basketball for that matter. Guys, I saw him. Everybody, you would not have believed the crowd when the Creighton-Durham Hall Raiders popped into Braemar Field when he was a senior. He hit a moonshot that went all the way onto the golf course from the baseball fields, guys. It was incredible. The place just totally, United fans just loved it.
I can only imagine, you know, Joe with his style, too, at the time. Some people may have perceived it as arrogance, you know, a high school kid that was as smooth as Joe, that had quite the following as he did throughout his junior and senior year. And then to do it in Edina. Where they're known to have big-time athletes come out of there, whether it be hockey or whatever sport it was back in the day. So Joe Mauer, you know, he is Mr. Minnesota. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's a hot-button subject, hot topic. And, you know, people are on both sides of the fence with Joe.
Okay, one final question on that, Tim, before we bring you in. Al, at some level, as a player, you have to hear that complaining, don't you, a little bit? And
yes.
It has to bug you. I mean, you're human.
Yes, sir. Oh, you definitely hear it. And, you know, you use it. You hear players say all the time, everybody was against me. I used it as motivation. Well, you know, athletes look for little things like that just to try
sure.
to keep them going. It continues to motivate and perpetuate their athleticism to be the best of the best. And you've got to have that chip that motivates you, man. It's just motivation. And athletes that are good and can accomplish things at a high level are able to push that aside and not look at it as so much as personal as if people just are envious of where you are.
That's the key to it all. And speaking of envy, how about Tim Kolomainen at CHS Field Lowertown yesterday with the Class 3A quarterfinals underway. Pitching and defense took center stage at the state high school tournament. Three of the four games decided by one run, and the fourth game was a 3-0 win by his club, Lakeville North, that over Anoka. Tim, what a day of baseball you had.
Wow, man, did you hear the sigh of relief? I thought you were going to bring me in and ask me a Joe Mauer question right off the bat.
Yeah.
I talk about stepping into the hornet's nest.
What are your thoughts? Is he overpaid? Is he a pain? What do you got?
I'm going to talk about the high school baseball.
You don't want to go there. Look at that. Allie took the combustible topic and bailed. Yeah, total chicken. Come on.
Can you hear me clucking?
Yeah. You don't want to get savaged by Al Newman and yours truly, do you? I think I know where you stand on it. But what a day and some great pitching. You had one-run games. You had an extra-inning affair. We're going to hear from the Chanhassen Storm in a minute or two with some post-game comments there. But across the board, Moundsview, the two-time defending champion, is now out as they go on to the consolation round. Northfield upends them in the first game yesterday. Northfield, though, the Raiders, a very good team. They're 21-4. They're pretty good. Thomas Meland went 2-for-4 for Northfield. Caleb Malik, the big guy, had an RBI single as well. But that was a terrific baseball game, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, great games all day. I mean, if you like pitching and defense, you should have been at CHS Field yesterday. We had some outstanding play, especially in center field. We'll get to it later, I'm sure. The St. Michael Albertville Chanhassen game.
Yep.
We had a couple of diving catches in center field that were big league all the way.
Who won that game?
I was 1-0 Chanhassen in 9 innings.
Oh, okay.
So Chanhassen, the 2 seed, is still alive. They're the only top seed in 3A that actually made it through.
Wow.
We're kind of going by chalk in 2A and 1A. Those top seeds are all moving on, but 3A was a toss-up, and it was all because of the pitching.
Well, let's jump into that Chanhassen, and we have an audio bite that I want to take a peek of here as we're going to listen in to Jordan Bonk. He was the pitcher. He was not of record for Chanhassen, and he went 8 innings. Tim had a nice little post-game interview.
How much pressure? I mean, obviously there's a lot of pressure in a state quarterfinal game, but as that thing kept going scoreless, I mean, what kind of pressure is that?
You know, we've had some games like that the whole year, and I just trust in my teammates like always, and knew we get the job done eventually.
Now, you guys, we were talking about you on one of the shows last week. You guys coming out of the consolation bracket or the losers bracket of the section tournament, too, having to beat Chaska twice. You know, do you guys kind of feel a little bit of destiny? I mean, does this kind of feel like, hey, we got something going on here?
Oh, yeah, big time. The first game against Laconia, and we lost in the sections. We just knew we had to battle back and figure our way back. And once we got those wins, we knew we had momentum, so we just kept it going.
Did you want to go out there for that ninth inning, or were you kind of out of gas by that point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Coach, I was at about 115 pitches, so Coach said that was it, but I for sure could have, yeah.
Al, what's your pitch count? When do you start worrying about a guy?
At 85. 85, 90. I just started laughing right when he said that, and I'm going, well, you know what? I say 85-90 because if it's a team thing, I think the other guys should pick up their load. I just don't believe in running guys out there past 100. If I get to 100, man, I feel terrible.
But if you win?
You know what?
Well, I never look at it that way.
Oh, okay. Tim?
You know, it's interesting you're talking about that, too, because one of the things, I'm at the Class A tournament right now down in Jordan at the mini-map, and one of the things that I noticed, that we're at the first game here at New Life Academy in Brandon, Evansville, and Thomas Bosick for Brandon, Evansville threw a two-hitter complete game yesterday to get them into the semifinals. Guess who took the mound to start this game, and we're into the seventh inning now, top of the seventh, and he's still out there.
Wait, how much did he pitch yesterday? How much did he pitch on the 12th?
He pitched the whole game, you said,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's on his 14th and final inning right now, so yeah. He's tied at 2 in the 7th inning.
Wow. No, I couldn't justify that in my mind. Knowing what I know throughout, you know, being a professional manager in the minor leagues and things, I just couldn't do it. And this, even with my summer team here, with the league having restrictions, I also have the standards that I uphold that from the minor league days. So I just can't justify doing that. That's why you have a team.
You're right, and no championship's worth that. I'm going to make an outlandish statement, maybe not outlandish. That borders on child abuse, in my opinion. I mean, seriously. I mean, if that guy mowed them down in that 5-0 win with 70 pitches,
yeah.
That's still a full day's worth of work.
Yes, it is.
And you need to have your time to recover. We wonder why we have Tommy John surgeries. We wonder why we have all this thing. You've got these baseball tournaments going on throughout the Twin Cities right now with youth players that are allowed to pitch up to 17 innings between bracket and pool play over a 3-day period. Come on. That is absolutely insane. And that is why these guys are getting hurt. There's no doubt about it. It's not about you got to develop more pitching. Tim, thanks for shedding that one to light. Who's winning that game right now?
I knew you guys would enjoy that one, too. I know the high school league has a 14-inning limit over a 3-day span, and so he's right at that limit now. We're tied at 2, actually, top of the 7th. good game here. So Brandon Evansville, given the defending champions their New Life Academy, all they can handle so far.
So now he's going to be the this isn't fast pitch softball. That's what I'm going to say there. Robbinsdale Armstrong beat Matamidi by a score of 2-1. And Tim, how big is the big guy at Matamidi? You have him listed as 7 foot in your current breakdown sports book. I'm talking about Sean. Do you say it, Shelley? How do you say his last name?
I believe it's Shelley. Yeah.
Okay. How tall really is he for Matamidi, that big pitcher?
You know, I took a picture of him coming out of the bullpen. You know, he was doing his pregame warm-ups. He came out of the bullpen with the coach and with his catcher. And I swear those guys didn't even come up to his shoulder. He's got to be 7 feet. If he's not, he's really close.
Is he left-handed?
Nope, he's a right-hander.
Okay.
But he's signed to go to Kentucky. So, you know, the big school's big B1 program's looking at him.
Right, right. Yeah, that's, you know, when you see these big kids, even in this league, the Northwoods League, pitchers that are that tall, they have such an advantage with the angle to home plate.
Oh, they're halfway down the hill.
Yeah.
He was throwing about 86, 87 in that game yesterday, too. But, yeah, you're right. He's, you know, he's got that angle. I mean, he must have looked like all arms and legs.
Yeah.
So to
he got out-dueled. 2-1. We were talking about him, but it's Jordan Kuznia from Armstrong there with a complete game four-hitter. He struck out 8, and he out-dueled him. Got Armstrong into that semifinal game. So another upset.
Well, so let's just, to get everybody up to speed here, Northfield and Lakeville North are playing in one semifinal right now, that at CHS Field, Lower Town. And then the second semifinal in the 3A is Chanhassen and Robbinsdale Armstrong. Chanhassen, of course, beat St. Michael Albertville in 9 innings. It was a sacrifice fly in the bottom of the ninth by Cole Kirchhoff, which was the difference. This is, by the way, the Storms' first ever appearance to the state tournament. They are now 24-4 on the season. They are on a roll. Travis Brown worked 9 innings for St. Michael Albertville. Jordan Bach, who we heard from, pitched 8 innings, scattered 7 hits, struck out 6, walked 2 in his effort. And then Hunter Even came on for the 1 inning's worth of work in the victory, taking the glory in the 9th inning. Meanwhile, for the Robbinsdale Armstrong Matamidi game, a 2-1 win. Jack Kuznia, as Tim mentioned, pitched a 4-hitter for the Falcons in that win. The Falcons now 17-10. Tim addressed some topics with Kuznia after the game.
Everyone knows Jelly. He's 6'11". He's a pretty big dude, and we knew it would be ours versus theirs, and pretty good pitchers on both sides.
Yeah.
And, we always focus on small ball. Our coach always tells us to really work hard, and when we're given opportunities to take them, so that's what we did, and it was really good.
Kind of cap a day of upsets here in the 3A.
Oh, yeah.
We only had one of the top 4 seeds advance.
Mm-hmm, yeah, hearing that Mountains View lost, that was the biggest shocker for us, at least.
You kind of feel like things open up a little bit for you, too?
It gives us some confidence that anyone can win on any day, so it gives us confidence going into the next round.
Now, your regular season was kind of a little up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got hot in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Kind of feel that confidence carrying forward here?
Yeah, getting hot at the end of the season, that's exactly what you want to do, so we did that, and we're still pretty hot, so hopefully we can keep that going.
Great work. High school baseball coverage only here on Sports Radio 105. The Ticket, Tim Colomine, getting it done. And Tim, one of the things that stood out to me in that effort was Robbinsdale Armstrong's ability to play station-to-station baseball. And they're playing some pretty good ball right now.
Yeah, they didn't get a lot of chances against Shelley. I mean, he was on his game. He struck out 7. He only gave up 4 hits, too. But when they did get guys on, they were able to move them around the bases. And you know, that game was tied into the 6th, and then Matt Bachmeyer singled to score Troy Ouellette. You know, they took advantage. They had a couple opportunities, and they took advantage of it. And I guess right now that's what you have to do, especially when you're getting these top pitching matchups that you got in that quarterfinal round. We'll see. I'll be real curious today to see if we have some similar scores. We're getting into the number 2 pitchers now today for most teams, with the exception of the game I'm at.
Yeah.
But you'll see, you know, you'll see how some of those offenses perform against number 2 pitchers today.
Al, when we get into these types of games and the competition gets the way it is, where it's very well matched with great pitching and good defense, a lot of base runners can be had, but a lot are left there. Some of that's from shutdown pitching, some of it's from the defensive side of the baseball, but really when you do make those errors or you have a little help out moment, those can really be escalated.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, as a coach, you're always talking to the players about limiting the extra outs or situations that you put yourselves in that you can't get out of, like missing the cutoff man and allowing a guy to advance a base, which prevents you from having the double play in order. when you get a bunt play, do you take the chance? It's not a calculated risk. It's a risk, not risk worse reward situation. Go ahead and get the out, and then we'll deal with what's left afterwards. It's hard to explain that to kids because when they get in those situations, their eyes get big and their adrenaline flows, and they get excitable, and a lot of times they create the drama themselves.
Tim, in the Class 2A, you were up at Dick Putt Stadium. What a great spot that is in St. Cloud. And again, we had 3 1-run games and a 12-4 game. That was Cathedral. Boy, they look good, St. Cloud Cathedral. And then Cathedral goes on and beats Marshall by a score of 6-2. In the other semifinals, it was Rochester Lord scoring off with Minnehaha Academy. Minnehaha Academy picks up the 6-2 win there as well. By the way, Minnehaha Academy knocks down Kevin Tappany's Providence Academy by a score of 2-1 in 8 innings. Tim, that tournament is shaking down. You got 1 versus 3. Looks like a good final at Target Field on Monday.
Yeah, actually that one, because the weather cooperated up in St. Cloud on Thursday. They are actually done except for that championship game. Marshall ended up taking third place. Cloquet was the consolation winner. But that's got to be one of the top championship games that we'll see. You got the 1 seed and the 3 seed. St. Cloud Cathedral is still unbeaten. They won 49 straight games. They haven't lost since the playoffs of, 2013.
It's incredible.
That is simply amazing. I hadn't even heard that.
That is a story of stories.
That's an awfully good team. They've got 2 top pitchers that really, and because of this, the rain that happened in that championship game getting moved to Monday, they're going to probably be able to go with both of those guys.
Both
Dominic Ossing and Jeremy Tyson. So, they're going to be tough to beat. They actually played Minnehaha Academy once this year. They played way back on April 17th. And believe it or not, I was at that game. And St. Cloud won, obviously, 7-2. So they've got the confidence. I wouldn't pick against them. It looks like a second straight unbeaten season if you were going to ask me to make a pick.
That is good stuff, Tim. That ends this segment. By the way, yours truly will be on the call with Malcolm Kellner at Target Field. That's at prep45.com. It's the best $4.97 you'll ever get to spend with yours truly and Marcus calling some great games. We will have the 2A and 3A finals. The 1As are going to be available as well, so they'll be online as well. So those are going to be some great games. Otherwise, go on down to Target Field for some great high school baseball action. When we come back, 5 questions with Al Newman. Tim, thanks a lot. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the On Deck Radio Show. Dave, David Helmer, it's just great to be in here, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, here we are.
Feels good. Lights are on. Power's up.
I love this studio. Did I ever tell you that?
No, you have not.
It's something about it.
Okay.
And Journey.
You
anyway.
Get outside more often.
Yeah.
You need to get outside and get some fresh air.
All right. It's about that time. I cannot wait to watch some more baseball this weekend. It's been great. We've got big John Leach toeing the rubber for the Edina Legion team against John Cook. That's going to be a nifty battle. 2 guys with great stuff. I'm looking forward to that one. So,
I'm interested to hear Gino's side of the story next weekend.
Oh, you know,
week,
that'll be well worth it. You know what? He'll tell you the truth.
Sure.
I will, too.
Yeah.
Okay, 5 questions with Al Newman. This one popped in last second. Would you or would you not have signed Joe Mauer when he was a free agent?
I would have not signed Joe Mauer at the time. Nothing against Joe Mauer, but at the time I'm thinking a catcher. How many more years did he have behind the dish? But you would have thought that he still would have had at least 5 more years behind the dish. So at the time, I would have said, man, yes, we got to have him, but how much can I get for Joe at the time? Because if you recall, we did have a couple other catchers in the system.
Remember Wilson?
Yes, Wilson Ramos.
That was a tough one to watch go.
Yeah.
That was that.
You know,
but,
and that's who they had been talking about all along back there. You know, the transitional period. So, you know, there was a couple of good catchers in that minor league system. Nothing against Joe again, and I'm not trying to preface anything. I just would not have done it.
Okay, question number 2. The catching position at the major league level. How incredibly taxing is that on those players that the layman wouldn't understand?
So much so that kids that I coach now that are supposed to be young and not and pain-free, I still give them days off based off of they just get beat up. It's not so much the foul balls and foul tips. How about the balls in the dirt?
Oh, and what are you doing? You're bouncing all over the place.
That they catch for the pitchers to be prepped and to tune their skills and then have to take it into the game. You know, before they took out the collisions at the plate, they had to deal with that. So it's a position that, man, I those guys are tough guys.
By far the most physical position in baseball. Here's the thing that I've always marveled at. You know, catchers throw that ball back to that hill.
That pitcher every time.
Pretty hard, right? Yep. And we talk about pitchers' arms and, you know, all of that. So they're throwing as well. Maybe not as violently, but still there's a lot of throws going on there. And to top that off, I think what's underestimated is the toll that you take from hip to knee when you shoot to block balls is incredible.
Up, down, and that's quick torque, jarring action to your joints and tendons, ligaments. It's just not a fun position. Those guys that do it make it look easy. Yadier Molina, Joe Mauer, you know, back in his day, the Molina brothers, Molina's dad. You know, it just seems to, you know who I think is one of the good receivers? Butera was a great receiver, great catch and throw guy. Mike Redmond was good as a backup. Suzuki is pretty good. You know, he's a catch and throw guy, had a career year with the Twins, a year or so ago. It's just a position that, man, you know, Russell Martin, I think of, it just wears guys down. And
it really
for them
does.
To be offensive and to do it at such a level that Joe Mauer did it for as long as he did it, I commend him because I remember growing up, it was all about Johnny Bench, you know, and his power. Really didn't hit for high average, but, you know, he was a home run guy, catch and throw guy. You know, that's how you viewed catchers, but they didn't last as long as they do, you know, like they did in the old days for some reason.
Question number three. The Twins will be in St. Louis here over Monday, Tuesday after the Rangers. It's like a split series, and they come home for a pair with the Cardinals. But then they host the Cubs, which, what a great series. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, that should be fun.
This is number three. What are your best memories as a player about Wrigley Field?
My best memories was a game when I was with the Montreal Expos, and I think it was somewhere around a 21-17 game. The wind was howling out. You know, I actually never played on the field. I took batting practice on it, but when I was with the Expos as a young player, I never played in that stadium where I was in the lineup. So just watching guys like Andre Dawson and Ryan Sandberg back in the day and the hit balls out of there. It was just the aura of the stadium. The people get excited. It's day baseball, and you could always have a nice meal at the end of the evening.
Absolutely. That's and go to bed and get up and play another one on the day side.
Sure.
There's something special. When the Cubbies are going, that place is
rocking.
Absolutely. This is question number four. When you start to raise expectations as a club, you start winning and things start, you know, people start expecting more from you. What type of pressure does that create on the positive and negative for a team?
Well, on the positive, you know, you're a team to beat. I was thinking, you know, when we talked about the Kansas City series, the Royals were proving to the Twins that they were still the team to beat.
Mm-hmm.
The team, the Twins were trying to grasp and said, hey, we're going to stick around here. Now Kansas City plays St. Louis, which is a big rivalry series, and then the Twins go in there. So hopefully the Twins can catch St. Louis on a down cycle after the high of playing against their interstate rival. So much of that goes into the sport behind the scenes, but when you're on top, those challenges are every day, especially on weekends. Then when you talk about the low of things, you know, it's a good feeling being on top, and when you get knocked back a little bit, you have to push the reset button and figure out, okay, how do we find that karma again? And that's what the Twins have got to do, because they do have a tough row to hoe coming up with a young up-and-coming Cub team, and then you've got St. Louis, who just seems to reload each and every year.
I love those St. Louis Cubs series. Short 1 minute for question number five. I thought Torrey Hunter's meltdown, if that's what you want to call it, was about as mild as it gets. what's the best one, manager or player, you've ever seen? You got about 30 seconds.
Well, you know, there was a minor league guy. I don't know his name, but he got on the ground and he crawled up.
Yes,
the guy from the Braves, minor league.
He took the rosin bag and like it was a grenade.
that's a YouTube sensation.
Yes, that was awesome. And I also liked Lloyd McClendon when he took the base and he walked away with it and said, we can't play the game without the bases.
That is creative for sure. Yeah. Al, great show today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be on again next week. Travel safe to Eau Claire, my friend. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was Al Newman, Tim Colamine, and David Helmer. Thanks a lot. On Deck Radio, I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.